Hey guys, how's it going, man? Oh man, I should be writing blog entries and things. Sometimes I forget. So, welcome to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Today's show. News. Complaints. 12 to 2 Eastern. Alright. Doesn't look like I got a goddamn any guests lined up here. I guess I should have. Well, what? We sent out emails to 5 or 6 people. So that ought to be enough to cover 3 spots, you know? But sometimes not. All the best interviewees, I guess, are getting sick of me. But that's alright, because I got a ton of news that I feel like talking with you about. And, you know, the thing about invites being out is sometimes they answer during the show. We go ahead and interview them anyway. Yeah, the Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. A friend of mine saw that tagline and laughed. That's what it says on my website. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. Sometimes I go off on tangents about sound money or murderer cops, but not mostly. Mostly it's the empire and on the police state, really the national level stuff. Although, yeah, I do my local level stuff as much as I can, but anyway. So I got invites out to Ramsey Baroud. To Con Hallinan, to Dan Frumkin. I've never talked with that guy before. Didn't he used to write for the Washington Post? I don't know. Greenwald likes him. And he writes for The Intercept. And at The Intercept, he wrote these, a two-part thing about the NSA and their speech to text. Their ability to monitor us all. And then, William Astoria had written this great thing about the empire. James Bamford, of course, knows more than anyone except Snowden and maybe Greenwald, but probably just Snowden from the outside, about the National Security Agency. And he wrote a great thing last week. If I can get hold of him. Did I mention Con Hallinan? He wrote a cool thing for Foreign Policy and Focus about Yemen, Saudi Arabia and their allies, and these kind of complicated things I wanted to learn about. So maybe that'll happen. Hey, join up the chat room. Hey, how's it going, guys? Morning to you, too. So, I was just chatting back and forth with Mitch Prothrow, seeing if I could get him on the show today, and the answer is nope, busy. But he said yes again later this week. Obviously a lot happening in Iraq. Elite Iraqi units abandon Ramadi in biggest Islamic State win since Mosul, is Mitch's headline at McClatchyDC.com. You know what? Follow the link from antiwar.com and you will not get stuck behind the paywall at McClatchyDC. Okay, that's your hot link through to McClatchy. If you're over your, what, 5 article quota or whatever it is for the month, just go to antiwar.com first. There's Mitch Prothrow. Elite Iraqi units abandon Ramadi in biggest Islamic State win since Mosul. Now, I saw some tweets this morning saying thousands of Shiite troops and militiamen headed to Ramadi. Yeah, okay, show me. That's just a tweet till I see otherwise. But, anyway. You may have heard Mitch's interview on the show on Friday. If not, I'll just go ahead and share a little bit of this with you. Iraqi security forces attempting to retake control of the western city of Ramadi were routed in heavy fighting Sunday, the worst defeat for Iraq's central government since Islamic State militants stormed across the country last June. In a replay of last year's military debacle, elite units abandoned their U.S.-provided equipment to Islamic State fighters and fled the area, leaving several hundred soldiers surrounded in the last government-held enclave in the city. Multiple security sources, none of whom agreed to be identified, speaking from both within besieged Anbar Operations Center, I meant to say the besieged Anbar Operations Center, as well as with the units fleeing the city, described the fight for control of the capital of Iraq's largest province as essentially over, after reinforcements sent on Saturday to retake the city were crushed by Islamic State fighters. All right, so here's the deal, man. I mean, there are lots of deals, but this is the one that I want to tell you is the deal. On Fox News, they go, man, this is a big deal. Ramadi, it's the capital of the Anbar province. Fair enough. Prothero says in this article, as he said on the show last week, the next town from there is Baghdadi, and it cannot be expected to last now. And then once it falls, that completely cuts off Baghdad from Jordan and from the Mosul Dam, too. So then who's going to protect the Mosul Dam? I said, well, what about the Kurds? Aren't they sort of kind of adjacent to the dam? He said, nope. It's not where they can get to it from where they are. Not right now, anyway. It is on the far side of Mosul from there. But so, yeah, anyway, I'm surprised they've even been able to hold on to Ramadi all this time. It's on the far side of Fallujah from the capital of Baghdad. But anyway, so this is a big deal as far as the war is concerned. What Prothero said on the show... and there's one more important point here, one more important lesson here. It's the elite forces. They're Rangers, basically. They're very best American-trained special forces types that have fled here. Not just their kind of lowest-level privates and specialists. These are their best guys, had to turn and run. So that says a lot about the Baghdad government's power there, the government of Shiistan, and their ability to fight the Islamic State from here on out. But then, so here's what I'm really trying to get to, though. I heard an interview with Michael Scheuer on, it was a conservative radio show, a right-wing radio show, although the guy seemed pretty anti-war for a right-winger. And he was interviewing Michael Scheuer, this is probably, I don't know, a month ago or something, 3 weeks ago, something like that. And they were talking about Ramadi then, because half of it had fallen to the Islamic State by then or something. It was already in the news, obviously. And so Scheuer, and the guy said, well, now, the Obama team says that Ramadi's not a big deal. It doesn't really matter to us. And Scheuer said, yeah, what a gaffe. Because, of course, that's absolutely true. Right? In the scheme of Iraq War 2.5, maybe I was getting ahead of myself calling it Iraq War 3. It's not really a regime change operation, is it? I assume too much sometimes. But still, in Iraq War 2.5, it's a big freaking deal whether Ramadi is in the hands of the government or whether it's in the hands of the Islamic State. But to the United States of America and our real national interest, who freaking cares? Other than we're sorry that of the pain and the grief that of the, you know, the ongoing suffering from the war that any people have to deal with or whatever. But I mean, from a national interest point of view, why do we care? Other than, you know, our politicians owe it to the people of Iraq to say sorry and really mean it. Sorry for destroying your entire society. Oh, it was bad intelligence, they cry. We can't leave now. We have to stay and help the Badr Brigade win their civil war. We just have to, or else our soldiers will have died in vain. Iran's auxiliaries must achieve total victory, or else the violence will get worse, the Americans said. The people, well, the politicians and the people repeating them. But other than that, who really cares? What difference does it really make to America for the long run? Nothing. We could just quit. Forget it.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C., but those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel Lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys. Hey, did anybody watch the Vans pool party on Saturday? I know most of y'all ain't skaters or nothing, but they had Jeff Grosso being the announcer, the sportscaster announcer guy in there with Neil Hendricks for a minute. I guess during the Masters part. It was so great. I hope that's all on the YouTube. I'll watch that again. That was the best sports casting in world history ever. Maybe gotta be a Grosso fan. I am. Lifelong. All right. Anyway, it's my show. It's about other stuff than that. It was cool, though. Great contest. All right. So, Christopher Mannion. I haven't talked to Christopher Mannion in forever. I wonder how the hell he's doing. You know, when I first read Christopher Mannion on Lou Rockwell's blog, I was like, wow, this young guy's on fire. Boy, does he hate neocons. This is great. And then I called him to see if I could get him on the show, and it turned out he was like 80 years old. And the reason he hated the neocons so much is because he was there, man, all along, the whole time. And anyway, he's really great, and he has this, it's almost a tweet, this blog entry at lourockwell.com's, Lou's blog there. National Review finally admits that Bush's Iraq invasion and occupation was a, quote, catastrophe. No apologies, however. And then it's a link to this article about Jeb Bush and the politics of him not answering the Iraq question very well for that 2016 campaign crap. But, of course, no apologies. But I'm glad that they did, though. I think that makes for a great talking point. Look, even the National Review, even Jonah Goldberg's National Review now admits the Iraq War was a catastrophe. Say it with me. In fact, go back and read Jonah Goldberg, Baghdad Delenda Est. That means Baghdad must be destroyed. It's harkens back to the old Roman Empire, and I forgot which guy it was that was always saying Carthage must be destroyed. And then, of course, the Roman Empire broke itself, breaking Carthage. Idiots. Anyway, so yeah, no, go read part one and two of that by Jonah Goldberg, Baghdad Delenda Est. Anyway, so now even Jonah Goldberg's National Review concedes that the Iraq War was a disaster. And you see what they're saying there, really, is that everybody who said that they were wrong all along was right. And they admit it. That no apology is not just to the Iraqi people. It's every decent person in America who tried to stop them, who they relentlessly smeared as terrorists and traitors and communists and God knows what other crap. And of course, the rub being that National Review is a bunch of Reds, founded by a bunch of Reds anyway. And it's still a bunch of former Reds, right for them. Anyway, so there you go. National Review admits that the war was wrong. And you know, yeah, who was it that tweeted me and said, man, we gotta thank Jeb Bush for blundering this question. Because if he just answered it and dispensed with it, it might have been dispensed with. But he really screwed this up. So now They just can't get over it. The even on the right, it's Fox News hosts keep asking about it. Chris Wallace on Fox News apparently got into a big thing with Marco Rubio about it over the weekend. And now, I'm sorry, you know where this is going. Rand Paul. I can't help it. I'm obsessed. It's Ron Paul's son, and yet he falls so far short. It drives me out of my mind. And here's what I'm thinking. I'm looking at the list of Republican candidates who are running already. And I'm thinking, it would be so easy for Rand to say, look, each and every one of the other dozen of these guys are completely and totally interchangeable and not different from each other in any way. And you all know it. Republican rank and file know it. Conservative movement conservatives know it. Talk radio knows it. The American people know it. Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, Marco Rubio, all these guys are exactly the same. They want empire, permanent war, bankruptcy, a police state. And then there's me. I want peace and sound money and our Bill of Rights back. Vote Rand. That's all he has to do. That's all he has to do. And in fact, that's the only hope he's got. Lindsey Graham. He's like Marco Rubio, only a little bit better with the talking points. He's got conviction behind his mendacity for real. And now, here's the thing of it. Especially those of you regular listeners of this show certainly know this. The war party's case on virtually every issue, all 14 wars they would have us in right now or something like that, as Rand correctly said not long ago, they're completely full of it, right? Everything that they say is nonsense. It's all based on a bunch of false premises that aren't even true. And then their logic doesn't even make any sense. And mostly the problem is they put Israel first and not the United States of America. And so, in other words, it ought to be real easy for Rand Paul to kick their ass all the time. He doesn't even have to read hard and deep. He just has to read constantly. You know? Just keep up with the news, Rand. And it'll be enough to destroy them. Rhetorically. With such ease. You could do it. You could study Norm MacDonald. And try to get a hold of that deadpan a little bit. How to just... Yeah, well, if Lindsey Graham had his way, no. Well, see, I stumbled and ruined my example. But anyway, point being, that Rand sucks. Instead of being the Rand Paul I want him to be, you know, Ron Paul Jr. up there. Instead, oh, well, you know, we shouldn't topple secular dictators. Yeah, well, should we back them? How about the secular dictatorship in Egypt? Do you support that? Tell us why. Are you saying that we should still be supporting Saddam Hussein like in the Reagan years? That we should be supporting Bashar al-Assad? Is that your stance? How about we should not be supporting fascist, secular dictators, or perhaps even especially Mujahideen bin Ladenite revolutions against them? Backed especially by all of our closest allies like Saudi, Israel, and Turkey. Like in Syria right now. So how in the world do you go into a primary season like this and try to half-ass it? The real threat is Iran? That's the talking point he's going to go with? He wants to fight ISIS? But Iran is the real threat? Because that's what Israel cares the most about? The threat is radical Islam? Warmed over Rubio is all he is at this point, really. Lukewarm Rubio. That was really bad. The emphasis should have been on Luke, not warm. Anyway. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place. And features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire.
It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next one is June 13th in Denver. It's just $5 if you sign up now at taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. Yeah, I should have looked over to the left. Number 6 in the chat room helping me out. Cato the Censor. Is that really his name? Cato the Censor? It was Cato who was always calling, the Roman senator always calling for Carthage to be destroyed. Jonah Goldberg. What a terrible person. All right. Anyway, it's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Hooray. So here, Rand Paul says, I don't know what the hell he's saying. Rand Paul goes on NBC and he says, you know, yeah, we shouldn't have overthrown Saddam. Unlike the rest of them saying, well, at the time it seemed like a good idea. He's saying, no, even then it wasn't a good idea. We should not be overthrowing these secular dictators. Okay. But then he says, we are more at risk for attack from people who are training, organizing, and fighting in Iraq than we were before. Correct, in a sense. ISIS is more of an aberration than even Hussein was. Okay, sort of kind of true in the sense that Saddam Hussein was no threat to America whatsoever. But what threat is ISIS to the United States? They're basically, well, a pretty significantly overblown militia. Right? I mean, they're working on kind of making a state, I guess. I don't want to sell them too short or underestimate them, you know. But what incentive do they have to attack the United States, if any, to provoke another invasion, an occupation? That's what they want. War is the health of the Islamic State. See you at Dabiq, they say. That's where the Quran says that's where the apocalypse will happen. I guess the next stage after the Battle of Armageddon Hill or whatever it is. I don't know, man. Apocalypse Mountain. I don't know. That all sounds like a bunch of roller coasters at a theme park or something, doesn't it? Anyway. So, and then he attacks Hillary for the war in Libya, but not Syria. Iraq, Libya, and Syria are all basically the same policy. What Ariel Sharon wanted, overthrow all my secular fascist enemies for me, he wanted. So, yeah, anyway, I'm sorry, I'm just... See, I talked to Rand Paul in 2009, and I didn't know anything about him. I had met Ron Paul Jr. at a fundraising thing in 2008. Ronnie Paul is his name. And he seemed like a really great guy. But I didn't know anything about Rand. And then I interviewed him, and I thought, oh no, this is terrible. He's got the idea that he needs to be more Republican and less libertarian. And that instead of being a brave truth teller, he needs to figure out what people want to hear in larger Republican numbers and say that. Well, that's just too bad. And what a horrible sellout of his father's legacy, which was really great. Right at that time, too. And anyway, so he's done, he's taken so many bad positions over the years. And so many different positions on issues that I don't even care about. He just flip-flops all around and, you know, basically leaves people with the idea, if they know anything about him at all, it's that, well, he's Ron Paul's son and apparently doesn't believe anything other than what he thinks I want to hear. That's a bad reputation to have, especially so early in his political career, and especially when he's the son of a guy who, no matter what you think of him, you gotta admit that Ron Paul tells the truth. You know? It's like I learned about Barry Goldwater when I was a kid. My dad told me about Barry Goldwater. I disagree with him on everything. Voted against him in 64. If I lived in Arizona, I'd have voted against him my whole life long. But he's not a liar. He's just not.
Same thing with Ron Paul. He's just not a liar, no matter what you think of him. And Ron Paul, of course, not a warmonger like Goldwater. But, yeah, anyway, it's just a disappointment. And going into 2016, just think of how huge this could be. If Rand Paul would simply tell the truth, if Rand Paul would, you know, proverbially roll up his sleeves and say, I'll take on all of y'all at once, like Jackie Chan. You know, let's fight. Let's do this. You guys got John McCain's surrogate, Lindsey Graham, here? Bring it. There's not a thing you say that's right about foreign policy. Let's fight. And he can be polite about it. But he can just say, it's me versus all y'all, and I'm happy about that. The ones of y'all who want to, you know, run to get behind me in this parade, you better hurry up. Because conservatism is an anti-war movement now. Watch me. I'm leading the way. I'm turning the world on its axis. That's all he's got to do is try. That's all he's got to do. And he won't. I already know he won't. You already know he won't either. And, you know, I'm an anarchist, and I don't ever really think that politics is the path to the libertarian world that I want. But it could be the path to limiting some of the horror. As bad as Obama is, and he's killed a lot of people, and he's responsible for a lot of wrong. And, you know, face it, the Islamic State could have never happened without him. Not for withdrawing from Iraq, for supporting the Mujahideen war in Syria for 4 years, 3 years leading up to it. Anyway, you gotta admit, John McCain would have got us all killed in a nuclear war with Russia right now. You do have to admit that. We would all be dead. All of us. Burnt to ash, if even that. Incinerated right down to our atoms. Because of stupid. Boy, there was one where the American people actually made the better call. Not that I voted for him or anything. I hate Democrats. I'm just saying. John McCain. You know, if it had just been Mitt Romney, cookie cutter, plain old Republican, that would have been bad, but it would have been more or less the same as Obama, you know? Robert Johnson versus Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson versus John Robertson. That's what I meant to say. Like on Futurama. But McCain, he would have got us all killed. So there can be a difference in there, a little bit. Quite a bit. And so Rand Paul, and I think he'd have a better chance if he would just stand up for his father's principles. Yeah, there's a reason so many people loved him. Was the principles. And anyway, and see, here's who he's up against, okay? Here's the guy in leading as far as the rest of the Republican candidates running in these primaries. The one who knows the most about foreign policy and has the most hawkish position that they're all trying to line up behind is Lindsey Graham, who's a ridiculous fool. And so here's his quote. If I'm president of the United States and you're thinking about joining Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State, I'm not going to call a judge. I'm going to call a drone. And we will kill you. What? So, if the FBI entraps somebody into saying they love Baghdadi into an open microphone, then Lindsey Graham is going to send a drone to launch a Hellfire missile at them somewhere in New Mexico or Colorado or North Carolina or wherever the FBI is running their latest entrapment scheme on some idiot. Okay, so there you go. I mean, that was a half-assed stand when Rand Paul took it, right? He said, I am against the President of the United States ever using delegating the authority to the military or the CIA to assassinate American citizens only on American soil only. Oh, I don't care. And he said this in his original filibuster. You might have missed it if you were all excited by the rhetoric and all of that. But in his original filibuster, he said, you know, unless it's the FBI, domestic police, or state or local police, and they're using a drone to, say, I don't know, shoot a liquor store robber on his way out the door, an armed robber, I don't care about that. Huh?
Well, here's Graham saying, oh, I will use the national security state to kill Americans with drones. That's Paul's toughest foreign policy opposition. But he can't just stand on the truth. He's got to pander to the likes of Lindsey Graham, the ridiculous clown.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. This part of The Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
All right, so I'm Scott. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. So in the Pirate Bay, they got this movie. You might know what I'm talking about. I think it's called Ex Machina. I might have that wrong. I thought it started with an A. I don't know. It's about the hot robot girl who's alive and whatever crap. Anyway, so the antagonist in that movie is the guy, apparently, because I recognize his name. I thought, huh, I recognize that name now. So then I went and Googled it, and then, so yeah, that's the guy flying the X-Wing fighter in the Star Wars sneak preview thing. So I thought, huh, so that's the X-Wing fighter pilot guy, huh? Okay, I could see that. I mean, I don't know what his character is like, but I could see that actor actually doing a good job playing a character, you know? I don't know. He seems like a good actor. The robot movie was pretty boring, but... seemed like a good enough actor. I don't really know about actors very much. When I saw the list of who all is in the new Star Wars movie, I says, And everybody said, oh, it's that guy from that thing. And I didn't know what they were talking about. So that's good. They're all new to me. Like Mark Hamill was to, I don't know, your dad in 77. My first one was Empire in, I saw it in 81. Wait, is that right? Yeah, so I guess I was like 4 or something. 5? No, 81? Yeah, it didn't come out till 81, right? That's funny, because I thought I was only 3 when I saw Empire. I guess I was 5. Alright, well, anyway. Or maybe I was still 4. Not yet 5. Anyway, looks good. I want to... X-Wing fighter. I'm still 5. That's the real point here, isn't it? Yes, it is. Okay. House passes $612 billion military spending bill. Yeah. Who cares? Big deal. Another more than half a trillion on the Pentagon. Rubber stamp. And don't worry, all the cost of the wars and a whole lot of other stuff comes out of the war slush fund. I don't know. It's funny. At first, Obama said, you know, we're going to stop doing that. Instead of having separate war bills, we're going to make the war. We're hiding the costs that way. We're going to include the wars in the cost of the Pentagon budget. That's right. And then what they ended up doing was putting the whole Pentagon budget, or a huge part of it, into the war bill. Instead, they just turned the overseas contingency operations slush fund over to the rest of the Pentagon, too. Whatever. Stick them up. Your money or your life. That's the slogan over there at the Pentagon. Your money and your life, too. And by the way, for people who think that only a communist would call America an empire, and all we ever wanted to do was save you from the terrorists and the communists and stuff, you might note this piece here at the Agence France-Presse. Thousands rally against U.S. military base on Japan's Okinawa. This is a big part of Chalmers Johnson's book, Sorrows of Empire.
he talks about our bases, not just in Okinawa, but also in Korea as well, and the burden that it places on the local population, the amount of resentment against it. And the people of Okinawa, of course, have been trying to get rid of the Americans all along, and they just can't. Well, it's not really up to them, you see. They do all they can, but it's not really up to them. That's kind of the funny thing. I always end up going back to this because, I don't know, it's kind of ringing in my ear, man. Gene Kirkpatrick, who was a real dyed-in-the-wool communist, ex-communist, neocon, I meant to say, real dyed-in-the-wool neocon, meaning she was actually a democratic socialist Shachtmanite. That's not a real communist. I didn't mean to say that. She was a Shachtmanite, left-wing, basically a Trotskyite. Whatever 60s version of that. And then she became a Reaganite and was Ronald Reagan's ambassador to the UN. And, you know, had that almost, you could almost confuse it for John Birchie type opposition to the United Nations, only it was really a neocon opposition, which is quite a bit different, actually, in the scheme of things. But anyway, when the Cold War was over, Gene Kirkpatrick said, oh, good, now we can be a normal country in a normal time. In fact, I think she even wrote an article about that. Let's give up the empire now. And, you know, there were people on the right like Robert Novak and Pat Buchanan and Jude Winiski and Chalmers Johnson. Quite a few hardcore right-wing Cold Warriors. Scott McConnell, I think, also was one who said, what do you mean we're not going to abolish NATO? What do you mean we're not bringing the empire home? And you think of somebody like Pat Buchanan. There's nobody to this day who's more pro-Cold War against the USSR as him. He does not retract one bit of that. Hey, it was the USSR. We had to do what we had to do to contain them. To save humanity from them. And he's even pro-Vietnam War still. But then when the Cold War was over, he said, all right, that's it. Emergency's over. Now we're supposed to be a constitutional republic, not an empire. Now, unfortunately, with Pat, his message at the time when he ran back in 92, he brought all this ridiculous, divisive culture war stuff with him when he should have put war first then and reached out to the left then and said, you know, we're up against the entire military-industrial complex. If we're going to do it, we got one shot. It has to be the people versus the right-wing, you know, militarist establishment in America, the national security state. We need a serious platform of maybe even kicking the military out of the Pentagon and turning it into a library, like FDR promised, and giving them a quaint little Republican, little R Republican office building to work out of. And abolish the CIA and abolish the global empire of bases and be a normal country in a normal time. And when George Bush Sr. went with the Hawks and went to occupy Saudi and invade Iraq, there were a lot of people. And you know what? Okay, so I was only in ninth grade. I was, what, 14, 15. But I was trying to pay attention as best I could. And I was watching a lot of CNN and all that in the run-up to the war. And I got to tell you, and weren't Novak and Buchanan both on CNN? I still had no idea that there was right-wing opposition to the first Gulf War or to, you know, the continued existence of NATO, that somebody like Pat Buchanan would dare to use the term empire to describe America's position on the planet. Nobody ever told me that. And that might have been, just think about, you know, in the first Gulf War, they had really made that clear. Never mind the hippies chanting no blood for oil and give peace a chance, who can't even be bothered to learn about what's actually happening. What if they had made Pat Buchanan's argument prominent that all real flag-worshipping conservatives want to bring the military home and keep it here, and we don't give a damn about the Kuwaiti monarchy or who rules that land? And we really mean it. If they had let the American people know, you know, and it was partially his fault too, man. He made too much about trade and too much about abortion and too much about, you know, the war on Christmas and whatever crap. I like Pat. I really do. He's a nice guy, but he kind of I wish I had been his PR man back in 92 and just made him, look, man, be as conservative as you can, but only to make that anti-war argument. Forget all this. You know, fight about abortion later. We gotta abolish the empire now. Peace dividend now or never. And maybe it could have been done then. I don't know. It's probably way too late by then, right? I'm pipe dreaming. But it shows, you know, to me, it's the media cheat there. I really was trying to pay attention to that. And Novak and Buchanan, they're some pretty prominent Republicans, you know? And I think that the rest of the American population, as well as myself, were cheated out of, you know, being told, being exposed to that entire narrative. We will Cold War the hell out of the USSR. But now that the Cold War is over, it's time that we knock this stuff off. The last thing we need to do is go searching for monsters to destroy. Who knows what might happen as a consequence, you know? Seems like things could have been different. Anyway, yeah, that's just me. Really, you know whose fault it really is the American people, not Pat Buchanan's. The American people did not insist. They didn't try to find out the truth. Hell, they could have elected Ron Paul in 1988. The end of the Cold War would have seen... Wow. Well, I'll just let you dream about that for the next 4 minutes. Wait. Seven. And then I got a bunch more important news, so hang tight, guys. It's the Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org. Twitter.com/ScottHortonShow. Follow me there, would you? Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at DarrensCoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. DarrensCoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. DarrensCoffee.com. Hey, all Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. All right, guys. Welcome back to the thing here. I'm me. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yeah, sorry no interviews today, but working on getting some good ones for later in the week. Tomorrow night... I know, we probably should, I think we're like one of these, when the TV network tries to kill a show and so they keep rescheduling which night it's on or whatever kind of thing. Jeff Tucker and I keep doing that to ourselves, deliberately, for some reason. This time it's gonna be on a Tuesday. Tomorrow night, Eye on the Empire, episode 5? 6? Something. Jeff Tucker and I. And we'll be talking about things, you know, the different wars and some foreign policy. And I've got a few questions for Tucker about some libertarian history and some older wars that ought to be interesting for you guys to listen to. And so, yeah, full plate. Let's talk about the great Jeff Tucker and me. And that's at liberty.me. Eye on the Empire at liberty.me. And you should sign up, but you do not have to sign up in order to participate and watch the show. I don't think. I hope I'm right. I'm pretty sure I'm right when I say what I just said, but I might not be. But I'm pretty sure you do not have to be a member, but you should sign up anyway because liberty.me is really cool. Okay, good. All right. So let's see. We talked about the Empire, and we talked about Iraq War 2.5. I've decided to rewind that a bit from calling it Iraq War 3 to scale that down a little bit. Iraq War 3 is still coming. This is Iraq War 2.5. It's still really bad. And it's worse than Iraq War 1.5, which was horrible. But it's not quite on the level of Iraq War 1 or 2 yet. So I'm going to have to call it 2.5. Realize we've been bombing Iraq. The United States of America has been bombing Iraq for 24 years. With actually between 2011 and 2013, you could call that 2-year break. But 2.5 maybe. Otherwise, we've been bombing them for 24 years. Anyway. Okay, so now on to Yemen. Southwest corner of the Arabian Peninsula there. How do I tell this one in a short way? No such thing as Yemen, really. It's been a unified country for a while now, but it's been split apart many times, too. And it's a very old civilization there. And, you know, the Westphalian nation state is kind of a cookie-cutter sort of square peg, round hole, or is it the other way around with that cliche, I forget, kind of a thing here. So you have some socialists, you have some more jihadist types, you have some the Zaydis, who are kind of Shia, although in practice they're not much different than the Sunnis. What's different about them is their politics, not their religion, really. Otherwise, they've been praying side by side all along. But it's not really a Zaydi war, it's a Houthi war, and that's a more of a political designation of the Zaydis that are fighting. And so, well, there's been a dictator there for about 30 years, supported by America all along, as far as I'm aware, up until 2012, when the Arab Spring in Yemen won and kicked his ass out of power. And the Americans helped see him out the door, but they didn't really have a choice. They helped see him out the door, and then they held a one-man fake election, kind of counter-revolution with the Saudi monarchy, and put this guy Hadi in. Hillary Clinton praised his election. Oh, we're moving forward, democracy in Yemen. There was only one name on the ballot. I mean, in the Soviet Union, at least they had one party on the ballot with a bunch of different names, right? For crying out loud, Hillary Clinton. What an embarrassment. Anyway, so then what happened was the Houthis, who are the Shia rebels from the north, who the old dictator Saleh had been fighting against, well, they made a deal with Saleh to work together to fight, and Saleh still had some army divisions loyal to him, and he actually is a Zaydi, if not a Houthi, right? And so they have now conquered the capital city, and in fact gone all the way to the port, that's Sana, and then they've gone all the way to the port town of Aden, too, in the far south. And so then at that point, the Saudis started bombing them. A.K.A. the Americans started bombing them. And as the Wall Street Journal describes, I kind of flubbed this because I was going from memory and I wasn't sure, but I went back and I reread it. I forgot it was during somebody's interview of me, or maybe it was during my own show. It was a question I was asking somebody or something. I screwed this up. Oh, it was. It was in the Adam Morrow interview. I screwed this up. But I was right. The Wall Street Journal says that the Americans are picking the targets for the Saudis to bomb. And then so it was just, and then I think when I talked to Mark Perry, I said, well, it's all battleships and American AWACS doing the command and control during the thing too, right? It's got to be the Americans coordinating the attack. And I believe, right? Didn't he say that that's correct, chat room guys? Didn't Mark Perry say that, yeah, that was his information too? And he was talking to generals in the Pentagon about this? Somebody help me out with my memory problems here. I don't know where they come from. 62 killed in Yemen clashes before ceasefire ends. Some ceasefire. And that's from yesterday. I'm behind. I don't know what's going on. And then, you know, I don't know what to say about this, man. U.S. officials say Saudis are set to buy nuclear weapons from Pakistan. Oh, come on, but it's from the Sunday Times. Get the F out of here with this. I don't know. Is that what Jason's linking to? Yeah, you know, it's the Sunday Times. That's a bunch of crap. Who says so? Don't believe the Sunday Times. They're a bunch of liars, man. I mean, I'm not saying they're always wrong about everything. In fact, they had a pretty good story that confirmed my bias, doggone it, about Obama sending Mujahideen and guns from Libya to Syria back in 2011. Remember that? 2012, maybe? And then it was the Muslim Brotherhood and factions to the right of them fighting over the spoils when it arrived at the port in Turkey. Yeah. But then again, they launder a bunch of MEK BS about Iran's nuclear program all the time, too. So, I don't know. But here's the thing about this. Here's this, another reason. This is the real reason I don't believe it. Is because this is a talking point of the neocons that Obama's nuclear deal de facto is giving nuclear weapons. That was what Dick Cheney said, echoing the same line of argument. That, never mind details, conservatives don't really need knowledge about stuff. They just need an impression to latch onto. Obama's given away the whole store to Iran. Yes, sir, he's giving them nuclear weapons. So now Saudi's got to get them too. But wait a minute. Iran is not making nuclear weapons, and they have not been. They've got a safeguarded civilian program. They have all along. The Saudis know it. And the nuclear deal doesn't undo that. The nuclear deal doubles that. Now instead of just having a safeguards agreement with the IAEA, they'll have an additional protocol to their safeguards agreement with the IAEA. Oh my God. Bang the cymbal. Release the balloons from the ceiling. The additional protocol. So now why in the world... And besides that, they're scaling back their centrifuges and they're turning one of their facilities into just a research facility, etc. Now tell me, why in the world Riyadh would need to panic about that? Let's see. They've been living with an Iranian nuclear program for a full-fledged one for a decade straight now. And they haven't gone to the Pakistanis for a nuke before. And now that it'll be a double, super, extra safeguarded nuclear program, they're going to go ahead and buy a nuke from Pakistan? Yeah, it could happen, but I ain't buying it. Things the Sunday Times says. That's where what category that's going in for me for now. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show, where I complain about America's horrible foreign policies. There's so many of them, I never run out. Now, Obama had his meeting with the GCC. Nice to see the Saudis disrespected him and didn't show up, or the top guys didn't, whatever, this kind of thing. Anyway, Obama promises weapons ironclad pledge to protect Gulf nations against Iran. So there you go. Obama just created a NATO for the Gulf region, which really, you know what? They already had declared the Carter Doctrine way back when. Back when Empire Strikes Back was first coming out. When it was being made, even. But the thing of it is that, he's just escalating it. And now it's true that Iran isn't attacking any of them anyway, but I guess it's easy enough to cause a fight across that strait. And of course, part of having a Republican president is that the only public opposition to his policies on foreign policy in this country, because Rand Paul is worthless, come from the right. And people saying that he's not doing enough. Hillary Clinton had talked about putting the entire Middle East under America's nuclear umbrella. That's what they call it. You ever notice how politicians always have to make up all this fancy new jargon to describe what they're talking about? We ought to give a promise to any of these countries that if they get in a fight with anybody, that we will use nuclear weapons against their enemies. Let's call it a nuclear umbrella instead. Yeah, it's this magic umbrella. And it's nuclear. And it repels all attack like a magical force field. Over the whole region. All we gotta do is pledge to sacrifice every single American hometown to cause a nuclear war on behalf of this, that, or the other's king, sultan, potentate, whoever kills him and takes over next. Yeah. Anyway, so, there's that. And then, so here's, not quite a nuclear umbrella, but a missile shield for the Gulf. Oh man, there's so much money in that. How about that? Remember we talked about this, and I don't know why the guy wouldn't do my show. What, did he read my Twitter feed or something? I tried to invite the guy on the show that did the big thing for the LA Times about all the money that they've blown on these pie-in-the-sky projects that couldn't possibly work for the advertised price. $10 billion on a thing that can only look at a tiny little piece of sky at a time. That you have to know exactly where the missile's going to be in order to even see the damn thing, much less take your shot. And they know that from the beginning, and then they just go ahead and build it anyway. I mean, if they're talking about Patriot missiles, only we swear they got a little bit better radars this time or something, then at least we're talking reality. Not necessarily very effective, but at least, you know, okay, you're on the drawing board. But most of this missile shield stuff is a complete hoax. It's nothing but a hoax. They're just taking your money. And you know, I never can remember if it was the Washington Post or the New York Times. But there was a guy who was part of the so-called missile defense industrial complex who wrote a whole tell-all thing. I think it was the New York Times because I always think it was the Washington Post, but I was wrong about that. It was the Times, right? Pretty sure it was the Times. Anyway, this is back in, say, oh, I don't know, 2008 or something. And he writes about how, yeah, see, the whole thing is a scam. We're just making money. That's all it is. We're just making money. And not making money, like actually running a business and engaging in voluntary exchange with customers, but just basically getting money. That, yeah, getting money from the government for doing nothing, for pretending to be able to shoot down a bullet with a bullet. Hey, how about this, guys? And now I'm not talking about the local Patriot missile batteries like I guess they're talking about here in the Gulf, but on the American anti-ballistic missile defense for intercontinental ballistic missiles. Yeah, we'll use heat-seeking missiles for warheads coming in cold from outer space before they get hot. Right? That's the plan. We're going to shoot them while they're cold with heat-seeking missiles. I don't know if it's true, but I guess I believe it because Gordon Prather told me so. He said, look, the only way that you could protect from actual ballistic missile attack, hydrogen bombs coming in over the pole or whatever from space, from Russia or China or Britain, other treacherous powers like that, Israel, Samson option. The only way to really shoot those things down would be to launch H-bombs at them in space and enhanced radiation devices, basically neutron bombs, and use them in space in order to knock out the electronics on board the warheads. Other than that, you're shooting a bullet with a bullet at the edge of space, a heat-seeking bullet at a cold bullet. And never going to work. Never really meant to work. But it does, again, it binds us to their defense permanently forever. The GCC are states in the Union now, for intents and purposes. And in fact, they probably have a lot more of a say in America's policy than the American people do. So, I don't want to hear a bunch of complaints that they don't get representatives in the House and the Senate. They have far more influence than the Americans. Anyway. Yeah, so there you go. America, the corrupt evil empire. And then, man, so check this out. In Adelson's paper, Bibi's man, I hate that, Netanyahu, why would anybody give Benjamin Netanyahu the honor of calling him by his stupid little effeminate nickname? Sorry, I don't mean to be homophobic or whatever, don't crucify me, but... Oh, call me Bibi, everybody. Sounds like a golden girl. In Adelson's paper, Netanyahu's man says Pope helping Palestinians crucify the Jews. So it's Sheldon Adelson, the same guy who gets to pick who's your Republican nominee, is the same guy who bankrolls the biggest newspaper in Israel. It's a very right-wing, you know, it's a kind of a, I call it the Sunday Times of Israel or something. I don't know, right-wing rag, but it's free because Adelson pays for it all and just floods the market with it. It's a pretty right-wing population anyway, so I don't think they really read Haaretz all that much. But anyway, so the point is that the Pope has recognized Israel in a manner of speaking, basically. So what exactly was it the Pope did? He edged close to formal recognition, finalizing a treaty which makes explicit reference to the state of Palestine. And then they say outright in here that saying that the West Bank belongs to the Palestinians is crucifying all of the Jews. And that kind of overblown rhetoric to me just shows what little case they actually have to make for the West Bank. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, god dang, hard breaks always screw me up. So here's the quote in the Sheldon Adelson-run newspaper over there. And, you know, I don't usually do news just about, oh, somebody said something. Oh, like, boo-hoo, it's offensive or something like that. That's not what I mean. There's, you know, things revealed in here to me. So it says, Mr. Pope, establishing a Palestinian state on the Sumerian Hills, that means the west bank of the Jordan River, in the heart of the historic land of Israel, is the latest attempt to nail the entire Jewish people to the cross. And now, go look at this article. It's at Haaretz. It's called, in Adelson's paper, Netanyahu's man says Pope helping Palestinians crucify the Jews. And so, the whole thing goes on and on, bringing up all historic anti-Semitism ever. And saying, well, I don't know if he brought the Holocaust, but he's equating the Pope saying, you know, recognizing the Palestinians on the West Bank as having a Palestinian state. That's the same thing as all the rest of everything bad that's ever been done to the Jews. And is an attempt to nail all Jews to the cross. I mean, obviously that's figurative, but how about the fact that less than half the Jews in the world even live in Israel? What about that? And what about not all Jews think that all Israeli Jews think that, well, and certainly not all Jews in the world think that Israel ought to conquer and keep the West Bank forever as part of Israel? Implicit in that is that the Palestinians have to go at some point. Obviously, the so-called easy way or the hard way, which is worse than the easy way, which is horrifying. So, anyway, what's he talking about? The historic land of Israel. He's invoking a 2,000-year-old property right. Not just to all the land on the 67 borders, where they mostly successfully cleansed, as they call it, the region of its prior inhabitants. So, I'm not saying that was right, but I'm saying it's, at least it's mostly sustainable, right? There are Muslim and Christian Arab Israelis, but it's a 80-20 percentage, super-duper majority for Israeli Jews if you don't count the occupied territories. But now Sheldon Adelson has said, so what if Israel can't be a Jewish state and a democracy? Democracy sucks anyway, so we'll just have a Jewish state. In other words, apartheid is fine. Now, I'm not in favor of democracy in and of itself, because I'm a libertarian, and what I believe in is liberty. But you see, what he's talking about is just fascism. He's talking about, de facto, at least, annexation of all of Palestine, and a rule by at least a bare minority. And so anyway, many, at least liberal Zionists, have thought for a long time what they ought to do is let the Palestinians have their own state. That way, Israel can stay a 80-20 supermajority Jewish state and a democracy. At least they can tell themselves it's one, mostly. But now, to support the two-state solution, for the Pope to support the two-state solution is equivalent to the worst anti-Semitism in world history? It's nailing all Jewish people to the cross? And, you know, it's pretty clear what's going on here, right? Is, like Abraham Lincoln said, you can fool some of the people all the time, and those are the ones you want to concentrate on. Okay, I'm not sure if that was really Lincoln. And of course, I stumbled and screwed it up anyway. Well, the page refreshed on me and distracted me. It's my pathetic excuse. But that's what's going on here, is some people are blithering idiots. And if you just tell them, oh yeah, you know, without the West Bank, all Jews in the world will die, and then they start crying, then those are the people who you gotta sell. And everybody else doesn't count. They don't matter. The people who can't be bothered to know anything, but will just go with emotion and tribalism, and I'm not referring to just Jews, but it's the same thing with evangelical Christians as well on this issue, of course. If you want to go with that, then I guess you can believe whatever you want. But what are we supposed to be afraid of about the Palestinian state on the West Bank? That they're going to make nukes? Oh my God, when the Palestinian state gets nukes, we're all going to die, Netanyahu says. Did he bother trying that one on you yet? Did he need to? Anyway, so that's the point, is that the pro-occupation side, the only story that they have to tell, contains with it, at least implicitly, the notion that the Palestinians aren't human beings and they don't have natural rights. They're children of a lesser God, and screw them. Screw them. Oh, that's your olive tree? Watch me set it on fire. Screw you, I do whatever I want. Like Eric Cartman. And, I don't know. It's interesting that they really don't do a forced march, right? I mean, people say, Israeli right-wing nationalists say, we ought to force march everybody in Gaza into the Sinai Desert. We ought to drown all the West Bankians in the Jordan River, or just force march them to Palestine. I guess it's assumed there will be a bridge there. We're very humanitarian. Let them go to Jordan. That's the real Palestine, they say. They never do that. They just continue establishing facts on the ground. Facts on the ground. That's what you call it when you steal somebody's land and build a giant city on it. Oh, look at the fact on the ground. All with American tax dollars. Look, a new fact. Oh, that was your farmland? I guess you don't have a farm anymore. Now it's a fact. An Israeli settlement. And with a Jews-only road walled off from the people who actually own the property. And isn't that funny, too, that the vast majority of American Jews are liberals, and the vast majority of American Jews, I mean super majorities of American Jews, favor peace with the Palestinians and giving up the West Bank and ending the occupation. And why? At least implicitly, they recognize the Palestinians' property rights. American, progressive, and liberal-leaning Jewish liberal Zionists, they call them, they recognize the fact that, hey, Palestinians own property and it's wrong to steal from them. Isn't that cool? Ask a right-winger, ask an American conservative whether a Palestinian has such a thing as a property right. Hey, is it true that Palestinians are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights like life, liberty, and property ownership, Mr. Conservative? See what they say. Oh, man. Why you gotta bring up old stuff like the Declaration of Independence and the principles that make America, America? Yeah, American Jews, their Jeffersonianism doesn't quit, dude. They will fight for the rights of Nazis' free speech. They'll fight for the rights of Palestinians to own property on the West Bank and against the kind of kookery that you read in Haaretz coverage here. As though every Palestinian ever could ever pose a threat to the people of Israel. I mean, maybe if they start flying American F-35s, that might put them at a disadvantage in a way, but Palestinians have not a single jet, so.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Hey, you believe how fast time flies? Anyway. Yeah, I don't want to talk about Israel anymore. I got three more Israel stories. Netanyahu, answer to terrorism is more settlements. Declares conquest of East Jerusalem, quote, drama on a biblical scale. I'm not very fond of him. That's at news.antiwar.com. The great Jason Ditz there. News.antiwar.com. And then over at Mondo Weiss, Israeli military attacks Nakba Day protests with live fire. And then another one at Mondo Weiss. Let's see. I'm sorry, man. Let me say. That one's by Kate. I'm sorry. I forgot her last name, or if they say her last name on there. And then there's Dan Cohen. Siege on Gaza prevents children from receiving needed medical formula. I'm going, really? That's news? They mostly had all the medicine they needed, except for this stuff or something? Are you kidding me? Well, anyway. The disease is easily treatable in wealthy countries. PKU, that's the genetic disorder the kid has, requires a medical formula that is often in the form of milk, as well as carefully planned diet. But in the Gaza Strip, where 80% of the regular diet is detrimental to PKU patients, this formula is impossible to find. Kind of poorly written there, but anyway. You know, there was a thing I had last week that I never got to, where some NGO was saying, if they were allowed to leave, if they were allowed to leave, 100,000 Gazans would flee in an instant on the first day if they could. And I know you're wondering, what did they do that they're all locked in jail and they're not allowed to leave? Is this like a county in North Korea somewhere where they're forbidden from crossing into free China? Or the south across the DMZ? What is this, East Germany in the 1980s? What do you mean they're not allowed to leave? They'll get shot if they try to go over the wall? What prison is this? Right. That's it. You're right. That's the Gaza Strip. 80% of them are refugees, and of course, children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are refugees. The majority of them are under 18. The majority of those are under 14. And they're locked in a prison. Their fishermen get shot on a daily basis. They're not even allowed to go more than a couple of miles offshore. Sometimes not even that. An American Israel sock puppet fascist military dictator in Egypt, Rand Paul, call your office, has them blockaded on the south, and the Israelis have them blockaded in the east and the north, the sea in their west, and that's it. It's like Escape from New York, prison by the sea. Sorry to say the word sea so close together twice in different contexts like that. It's not very good writing out loud, but do what I can, you know. But anyway, yeah, they have no rights. They're like, right, like the slaves of communist East Germany in the communist totalitarian Soviet Union. Not sorry for saying communist twice right there. Yeah, that's what they are. They're slaves of a totalitarian system, not Hamas, Israel. That basically claims full ownership over their lives. Oh, on your dime. Every second Friday when you look at your check and you go, my God, they take so much out of my check. Yeah, that went to bomb and starve Gazan children with. Hey, it's expensive. And so you got to do your part. All right, also, look at Nick Terse here at Tom Dispatch. One boy, one rifle, and one morning in Malakal. Malakal is a city. I don't know if it's the capital or what. It's a city in South Sudan. And you know, Tom's introductory couple of paragraphs here are really worth your read, too. This might be running on antiwar.com today already, right? Oh, it is. It's the spotlight on antiwar.com right now. It's also on tomdispatch.com. The kids aren't all right. Presidential waivers, child soldiers, and an American-made army in Africa. Man. And to think, it really is true that the Democrats are a little bit less violent than the Republicans. Generally speaking. Well, I don't know. How do you compare Bill to Bush Sr.? What would Bush Sr. done if he'd had another 4 years, you know? And yeah, Bill Clinton killed a million, but Bush Sr. might have killed a million by the time he was done. Junior killed a million. Obama hadn't killed a million, but man, has he spread strife everywhere, and he certainly got hundreds of thousands killed at least. Probably better than half a million. And then, but he's just spread the empire hither and yon, like just completely out of control. And Africa, yeah, you know, we got a history with the people of that continent going back. Have you ever heard of history? Yeah, there's this thing. It's about trying to keep track of other stuff that happened, even from before we were around. And anyway, yeah, so this could be as bad as that, really, right? I mean, I don't want to be all alarmist and hyperbolic and this kind of that kind of thing, but Nick Terse has it that America's invaded the whole damn continent. We got, if we're not bombing them and attacking them and supporting their neighbors in bombing and attacking them, we're at least training their government's forces for a rainy day, which could be coming any time now. I have his book here, too. I don't know how long it'll take me to get to it, but I am going to read it. I'm obsessed with this topic. And, you know, because there's so much to know and I don't know near enough. And I read everything Nick Terse writes about this. But I don't know anybody who even pales in comparison to him about this. I mean, I know people who are mad as hell, and they know something. But as far as doing the work that Terse is doing, yeah. And, you know, his stuff, you got to read it slow and think about what you're reading, because it's dense, man. This thing is probably 5,000 words of all just facts. So much information. So fact, it might be worth a reread if you ask me. If I ask me. But so that's the deal. I mean, we know that we have interventions, that America's behind the occupations and the wars to one degree or another in Somalia, in Libya, at least special forces cooperating down in Mali, building drone bases in Chad and Niger, and of course, you know, have a huge base in Djibouti there on the coast of the Red Sea. And then whatever they sent in the name of Joseph Kony, some of that's left down in Uganda. But then, you know, that's all the stuff we know about, right? But then the stuff that Nick Turse is on the trail of is, well, it's every other country. And how many countries are there in Africa anyway? Well, high tens, right? I don't know if it's more than 100 or not. And there's almost 200 in the world, like 194 or 5 now. You know, there's some secessions now and then. Now that Iraq's broken up, something's got to do a new count. Anyway, I forgot now, but I think it's 90-something countries. And the Americans, look, they just come in and say, we got money, can we train your forces? Yeah. Please don't coup us. And then now it's a fight, you know, a strategy session game theory. All right, if we're the Americans' friends, they'll kill us. But if we're their enemies, they'll kill us. So what do we do? Break out your best mathematicians. The Americans have come. They want to train our forces. Don't panic. We have a little while before they overthrow and kill us all. But anyway, that's the book, and you and I both ought to read it. Real bad. Tomorrow's Battlefield, U.S. Proxy Wars and Secret Ops in Africa. And I bet you if you went to antiwar.com or to tomdispatch.com and you did a search, you could find probably, I don't know, I'm going to say a dozen solid articles on Africa by Nick Turse about the special forces and the second and first tier and the training and the wars and a lot of great stuff. All right, that's it. Out of time. Thanks, y'all, for putting up with me for another day. I'll be back tomorrow.